Mike Wan is Commissioner of the Ladies Professional Golf Association, the LPGA, one of the longest-running and most successful women's sports organisations in the world. Mike has been LPGA Commissioner for 10.5 years and overseen a resurgence of the tour, with a particular focus on the global makeup of the women's golf tour, as well as driving forwards the LPGA's 70-year track record of breaking barriers and providing opportunities for women. A lifelong fan of golf, Mike had a career in industry before pursuing his passion for sport. In April 2017, he was named Sports Executive of the Year. Mike talked to us about the effect of the COVID-19 pandemic on the tour, the challenges involved with postponing and restarting the tour, and the importance of inclusion and diversity in his organisation and others. Mike, thank you very much indeed for making the time to talk to us today. Golf is a global sport and the LPGA is an international organisation. How did you have to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic, which has affected communities across the world?
Yes, Sarah, when we pride ourselves in being global. You know, we have players from 50 plus different countries. You know, we play all around the world. We're televised in 170 countries every week. And I think pre-COVID, I would have said that was the LPGA's greatest asset. But because of our globalness, because as international as we are, we actually experienced COVID, I think, before a lot of sports, certainly for a lot of sports in the U.S. or Europe. We had planned to play in Singapore, Thailand, and China very early in our season. We were going to play there the last week in January, the first couple of weeks in February. So right. We started learning about COVID-19 before I think a lot of the world really had their head around it. And we made a decision to cancel those first three events when there was no such thing as canceling sports events back then. There was nobody to follow. In fact, the WTA was playing an event in Thailand the week that we canceled our event, which was going to be a few weeks later. So we got if I'm being honest with you, we probably canceled those events because of all the things we didn't know about COVID. And now if you jump forward, obviously, to today, we've canceled quite a few more events, or certainly postponed quite a few more events because of all the things we do know. So being global is something we're very proud of, and I'm sure we'll be proud of again very soon. But the combination of playing all over the world and having fans and TV partners that travel with us from all over the world meant that we had to make some changes to COVID, you know, way before most sports were dealing with them, and probably our biggest hurdles to getting back to play.
Right. And you must have had to make those decisions very quickly, very strategically, in conjunction with the players, with the sponsors, with the whole industry that goes behind.
Yeah, it sounds interesting to say now, but back in mid-January, I remember talking to a health minister from another country, and they said, listen, if somebody on your tour or a caddy or a media partner that was traveling with you were to come down with this virus, we would quarantine you. And now when you say the word quarantine, I think everybody sort of, but to me back then, quarantine sounded like something very military to me. I said, quarantine? You mean like lock up? And they said, yeah, we would lock you up at the time they were saying 14 to 21 days and make sure nobody else has contracted the virus before you could leave the country. And I said, so if we're playing a golf tournament, you would lock us up? And I said, well, we would just make sure you stay in your hotel for 14 to 21 days. And I said, well, we have an event the next week and the week after that. And I remember the answer was, yeah, that wouldn't matter in this case. And that was my first time thinking about the term quarantine as it related to a sport. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, that would be a pretty much an international sports incident. This is before there was any such thing as a cruise ship being held, or you know, things now that 4 or 5 months later seem almost commonplace. But having make decisions back then, I mean, I was thinking to myself, if we got quarantined in a hotel in one country for 21 days, we'd probably be international news every day, and we wouldn't be able to play any tournaments. And then mostly worried about the health and safety of my staff. Yeah, we had to make some pretty quick decisions based on a virus that at the time, you know, not many people even knew the name of it. We certainly didn't know what we were dealing with. I mean, today that quite a bit has changed in 4 or 5 months, but back then it was pretty ominous, to say the least.
And when we sort of look at the idea of getting up started and playing tournaments again and sports reopening, there are immense challenges there, I assume, in getting going again. Can you tell us a little bit about some of those?
Yeah, the funny thing is that golf, being an outdoor sport, usually played over 6 miles of outdoor space, is probably as good as any sport in terms of being able to sort of manage around social spacing. And, you know, it's very different than a contact sport or a sport packed inside a coliseum. But once again, our challenge that's always been our greatest asset of being global is probably the biggest hurdle we face now. As you know, you could certainly go play down the street at a local course in a lot of countries right now. And in fact, most of my players and most of my staff have probably played more golf in the last month than certainly in a long time. Because getting in your car, driving down the street, walking to the first tee and keeping separation from the other players is very doable on a golf course. And so a lot of people look to me and go, come on, Mike, I'm playing golf. Why isn't the tour? Well, our challenge is when you have players and caddies in 50 different countries, there's certainly countries all over the world today that you can't leave. You can't fly out internationally. If you do fly out internationally and land in a different country, you're pretty much having to stay in that country for 14 days to be quarantined inside before you can step outside in that country. When you start adding that up together, I mean, I could put on an event right now, but maybe only 40% of my players and caddies could get to that event. You know, our schedule still has 9 different countries and 9 different states on it. None of those countries, and in the case of the U.S., some cases, even the states don't feel the same about coronavirus, gathering, hotels, flights, how we're going to do our testing. They're very different in each one. So almost every tournament requires its own safety profile and approval process. So it's, I've said this many times, which is, you know, playing golf right now is probably as easy and as safe as anything you can do. Playing a golf tournament that involves players, caddies, and TV partners from all over the world becomes a whole different challenge. So our biggest challenges right now, beyond testing protocols, which are things we figured out, is really international border challenges and quarantine differences in virtually every place that we're scheduled to play for the rest of 2020.
And as you say, the safety and well-being of all of those hundreds of people behind the scenes, so to speak, who get these tournaments on the road.
Yeah, the interesting thing is, you know, we're going to be a pretty overly tested group, as you can imagine. We'll be testing players before they leave for a site, when they leave for a site. We'll have wristbands that, you know, show that people have been testing. You won't step inside a facility until you've gotten a negative test, if you will, and so that we know everybody's safe. That being said, we also, you know, we travel into a lot of small towns in all different parts of the world, all of which have gone through some, you know, some significant changes in their lives to control the virus. So when you say to a small mountain town in France or to a, you know, to a suburb outside of Taipei City, to Toledo, Ohio, to Portland, Oregon, here we come, you know, players from all over the world and fans from all over the world and media following with us. Some towns right now who probably circle this date on their calendar for years with the LPGA, we don't want to cause any kind of, you know, any kind of concern for them as well. So we really have to work with each city, each mayor, each health service, and each border that we cross just to make sure that they're comfortable that we're going to be safe. And we need to make sure that our team, who's going to be, like I said, overly tested, can be safe in those markets as well.
And it's clearly going to be a very intricate and challenging time to have tournaments happening again. Is there anything you are able to tell us about your plan for restarting?
Well, there's probably three things that are important to note. Number one is, as I've said to the players in multiple, you know, Zoom and team conference calls, I can't deliver you the 2020 that any of us signed up to be a part of when the year began. I mean, there was a different level of what 2020 was going to mean to anybody who had earned the right to play on this tour by the end of 19. As a result of that, I know you're going to be playing for less, whether it's less money, less exposure, less tournaments. And I know that many of you are concerned that you won't have a long enough season to secure your spot on the LPGA long-term. I mean, the LPGA is a tough business. Unlike Major League Baseball or football, where you have a 7-year deal with a 2-year option and a no trade clause, on the LPGA every week, you have to go make your money or you don't make any money. And to stay on tour, you have to play well each year to retain your spot on the tour. So we tried to take some of that pressure and anxiety off the table and said, whatever happens in 2020, when we start the season in 21, you'll be given the same spot you had at the start of 2020. So in other words, play this year, play for money, play for fame, play for Rolex rankings, world ranking points, play for your sponsors, but know that you will not be able to play your way onto or off the LPGA Tour or the other tours that we're a part of, Ladies European Tour, the Symetra Tour, a lot of tours that tend to feed into the LPGA as well. So essentially, I was able to say to players who know they can't leave their country, or between you and I, don't want to, you know, they're just not comfortable yet with how things sit, no matter how much testing there is, play as much or as little as you want to play. Your career is not at risk. And I think that was it took me a long time to get to that decision, but every day since I have, it's been the best decision we've made in COVID, which is we're going to put on tournaments. You're going to have opportunities to play, and we hope you do. If you don't, there's no penalty. There's no risk. And when we get to the other side of this thing, you'll all get the season you deserved when, you know, when this season was really set to start.
And clearly there's a desire from some of the players to get back playing again. I mean, that's what they do. And also for fans too, there's a real hunger to have sports back on our screens, back being played. Have there been ways that fans have been able to sort of show their support for the sport and for their favorite players during this lockdown period when there haven't been tournaments?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, for a lot of people, you know, getting back to some sense of normalcy also means getting back to the sports and the hobbies and the athletes that you follow. So we feel a responsibility to some degree to help all around the world, but in all of our markets, just return to some sense of normalcy. So so in the meantime, until we can do that the way we've always done it in the past, it's gotten pretty creative. I mean, we've had some screen golf, you know, projection golf with one of our biggest sponsors, Golf Zone, out of South Korea, where we have LPGA players. Some are in Korea. Some might be in Jacksonville, Florida, or LA, California, all playing against each other on a televised streaming, you know, tournament. We've seen individuals in different countries, both in America, Korea, Japan, where they're playing individual fundraising events where it's either match play or individual play. There's a few more of those still coming down the pike here in the next month, but all just designed to kind of keep us connected with our fans. I mean, I've always been overwhelmed with how incredible my athletes are as it relates to social media and engaging with the fans. I've said this many times. There's just no other athletes like the LPGA when it comes to not only appreciating the check writers, I mean, the sponsors that give us this opportunity. I mean, nobody writes thank you cards like the LPGA players do back to players, you know, back to our sponsors. And so staying connected with our fans and our sponsors has been something that I have not had to lead. I've just enjoyed watching. But all these things we've done to kind of keep our players and our fans connected is not the same as playing. So we're excited that come middle of June here or middle of July, to kind of get back out and broadcast around the world like we were before this all began.
When you joined the LPGA, you probably didn't envisage having to deal with the effects of a global pandemic on the tour. But looking beyond COVID-19, can you tell us about some of the things that make you particularly proud to be LPGA commissioner? And are there examples that businesses can look to around inclusion and diversity, and notably empowering women in the workplace?
It's funny you asked the question. I mean, I literally no less than a year ago, I remember sitting in an LPGA board meeting and saying, there's a reason why so many sports call us and ask us, how did we get so global so successfully? Like most companies that go global, it makes for a really cool PowerPoint, but actually going global is hard. And you have to learn new countries and new cultures, and you make mistakes, and you have homesick employees. Well, we went through all that over the last 15 to 20 years at the LPGA. And so now on the other side, of course, it looks really good when you have fans and sponsors and players coming from all over the world to join this global tour. But I remembered saying to the board, financially, we're as secure as we can be too, because we're going to live through recessions and setbacks in all different markets, but we're not reliant on one market. We're not a U.S. tour or a European tour or an Asian tour. We're a little bit of all of that. So we're in a really good shape. To, you know, when if one market's down, we can lean more on the other market and vice versa. I, you know, probably right then I should have looked out for the bolt of lightning, because what none of us foreseen is a global pandemic, which is probably going to lead to some degree of a global pullback or global recession that may or may not last a long time. So we thought we were our portfolio was as diverse as it can get, that we were really stable, and not that we're not stable, but you know, nobody viewed a potential, you know, pullback in terms of hospitality and brand spend that could happen all around the world. I think to your second part of your question, we're honored and I think proud of the fact that probably, if I'm being honest, really more in the last 5 or 6 years than the time before that, we've had so many brands look to us as a shining example of women's empowerment, diversity, leadership through women. I mean, we really do have young women from all over the world in every language background, and loud and quiet. And they're all independent businesswomen. They hire and fire their own staff. They only make money when they play and when they make the cut. I mean, they really are individual leaders. And so for a young for a young woman anywhere in the world, you know, whether they're age 8 or 18 or 28, you would look to these women and realize these are incredible individual leaders. And we've been proud of the fact that so many businesses have joined us to not only showcase our impact on women's empowerment and leadership, but to utilize us to put to shine a light back on all the things that they're doing. So mm-hmm. when businesses come in and we realize after getting to know them what incredible efforts they're making as it relates to these same topics, it's nice to be able to share that with my athletes and have my athletes globally talk about what these brands are doing. So I think if you jump back 15 years at the LPGA, you would talk a lot about, you know, about TV and hospitality, and all those things are still a really big part of why people are part of the LPGA. But the number one reason I think brands are part of the LPGA today is because it fits, it ties with what are important strategic values and priorities in their business as it relates to creating diverse workforces, ensuring that there's strong women leaders of the future, mm-hmm. creating empowerment opportunities that may not have been there 10 or 15 years ago. And I think that's probably over the long run going to be the LPGA's greatest strategic strength when it comes to sports sponsorship, that we're not just about good seats or good parking or, you know, or ads that run worldwide. We're about connecting with brands that share our values so that we can talk about what they're doing and they can talk about what we're doing.
Thank you very much indeed, Mike. It's been fascinating talking to you, and good luck with everything.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
The views expressed in this podcast are those of Mike Wan of the LPGA and not necessarily those of AXA XL. Since 2018, AXA XL has been an official marketing partner of the LPGA. For more information about the tour, visit lpga.com.